Okay. The first six sources, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth, all came when I was looking in a book which is called The Torah Shlema by Rav Kasher. Those of you who've never heard of the Torah Shlema or never heard of Rav Kasher, so if rabbis or others want to give a class and you're looking for material and you have nothing to say, so you can certainly open up his book and you will find something to say. If you don't find something to say after opening his book, then you probably should think about a different career. It's not just that he has so much material there. It's that each and every footnote, you can probably write an article based upon the footnote. And actually, I suspect there are many people who do. I remember more than one time reading an article and saying, wow, that's really interesting. And saying, well, let me look what Rav Kasher says. And I look and I notice that each source that he brings, one after the other, are the same sources in the article that I just read. And the person may have neglected to... But it's interesting how he had the exact same thought pattern. So, that's...
Now, you taught us a lot. I think you were the teacher who taught us you should always attribute...
Of course. The Gemara says that whoever says something in the name of somebody brings Gula El Olam. The problem is everybody quotes that and doesn't quote who said it in the Gemara. So it's Amar Rabbi Lezer, Amar Rabbi Chanina. Okay, so there you go. It's... Charlotte could be a straight man, right? Okay. Rav Kasher wrote a book which is actually very similar to the Torah Tamima. Actually, he did not like the Torah Tamima. Everybody else liked the Torah Tamima. He doesn't like it. And the reason he doesn't like it is because he thinks people should be buying his book and not the Torah Tamima. Well, here's the point. The Torah Tamima, those of you who've never used it, it's a great book. It's a great book. It's printed, Bereishit, Shemot, VaYikra, and so on, with the text of the Chumash, with Rashi, with Unkelus in the bottom. It brings rabbinic sources, and then he has a little bit of explanation to it. Now, the Torah Tamima is a great book because it's really interesting. It's a terrible book from Rav Kasher's perspective because he's actually not all that precise. He's not that precise sometimes in quoting sources. You look it up and say, oh, that didn't say exactly what he said. That Gemara didn't say exactly the way that he quoted it, and his discussion is not, and there are even rumors about that he may not have written it himself, that he actually was a man of some means, and he had hired some, what you would call today, kolel people, we actually call them today research assistants, to do some of the work. But Rav Kasher, on the other hand, instead of having like a little thing on the bottom of the page, by the time they finished, because two volumes were published after he died. By the time they finished, 40 volumes were published, and that's only through Bamidbar. So I'm saying 40 volumes of rabbinic sources on each and every pasuk of the Chumash, basically everything which you have to say. I'm saying, and then he footnotes it. So again, you want to do research, look in Rav Kasher. So I'm just telling you, full disclosure over here, that I use Rav Kasher for sources 2 through 6. Excuse me? But you know what? This is a perfect book, which should be on the computer, which you should be able to digitalize, because you have no idea where you're looking for something, or you might find something on it, unless you're like me and you sit and read encyclopedias, which, what can I tell you?
Since the age of what?
Yeah. I've,
since the only one that read the encyclopedias in my family.
I admit it. I read the whole thing. I do admit it. Okay.
You got your money's worth.
Okay. So, let's look at source number one. And as I said, this is the one source. I'm sure he quotes it someplace, but this I'm bringing to you. Omer of Avin Halevi, Berebi, Mimakat Dam He'eshiru Yisrael. Leave it to those Jews. They made money on the first plague on Dam. It was
sold water.
Right? This is not a new thing that they take water and they the water that you get for, I don't want to say which ones, the water that you get that you go pay for, my sister gets it from her tap. And if you want to visit my sister, bring empty bottles. Do you do that? You bring empty bottles when you go?
No.
Do
you?
Ketzad, how do they make money? Hamitzri v'hayisrael b'vayit echad. You could have Egyptians and Jews in one house. V'hagigit m'le'amayim. And the whole barrel was filled up with water. U'mitzri halach l'mlo takiton mitocha. And the Egyptian would go to fill up the water from inside. U'motziya m'le'adam. And what happens? Lo and behold, it's filled with blood. V'yisrael shotem mayim mitocha hagigit. And a Jew will take a drink and it's going to be water. V'amitzri omilo tainli biyadcha. Give me, you hold on to it and let me take a drink. And by the way, the rumors that this is where the Bloody Mary started, this is not true. That's something completely different. V'noten lo, he would give him, v'na'u sudam, but when he would give it to him, it would turn into blood. V'omer lo, nishta'a niva atam min ka'ara achad. Come, let's both drink of it, it's very romantic, let's put two straws in, and let's... Min ka'ara achad. V'Yisrael shote mayim v'amitzri dam. So you can have two straws in one cup, and it would be blood, water. U'kishahoy elokeach mi'Yisrael bidamim. You have to appreciate the word bidamim over here. The dami means money. But it also has a connotation, right? It's blood money. But when the Egyptian would pay with money, then it remained, which means basically God is our senior partner in this. This was a ploy to make some money over here, and this is how Jews got into the water business. Okay, beautiful midrash. Do you like it? They teach it to the kids. They teach it in school. You never heard it before. You guys should all go back to kindergarten. What? What makes it terrible? So you think it's terrible for a different reason, but go ahead. Why is it terrible?
Because it shows the Jews taking unfair advantage of Egyptians, even in their difficult circumstances, and all it can do is bring more tourists to us, more hurt our reputation even more than it already is.
But one second. But the Midrash probably is coming from the starting point that the Jews were workers who were not fairly compensated. And this is a way of evening things out a little bit. But anyway, the whole Midrash over here, the whole thing is based on damim. Either it's dam or it's dam. The word damim over here, again, which is the funny word, that's another word for money. So either the Egyptians paid the money or they... See, I knew that you wouldn't like it for social reasons and all kinds of things like that, whatever.
That's why you brought it.
Doesn't it
beat
the stereotype
that
all Jews
want
is money and blood money and Shylock and all that stuff? Doesn't it beat that?
Yeah, but it's true. So.
No, you said that when they tried sharing it, it didn't work. So they did try to share it.
Yeah, the only way is they got to pay. You got to pay the man. Yeah.
Yes, they. I attended a whole class.
Again?
It was about,
you got to stop doing this.
It was about why it was positive that we took the gold and silver from the Egyptians and that it was positive materialism. And that,
the gold and silver was very positive, and it's great because it all ended up in the golden calf. So now, let's
no,
that worked. It worked out. Not the women. Who tells you these things? Okay, let's go.
A woman, of course.
So of course, all of this bothers you for moral reasons, for other reasons. The Ibn Ezra didn't like it for a different reason. And let's read the Ibn Ezra, source number two. V'yichpuru, and they went digging. Rabim omrim, many say. Ibn Ezra is telling you what the social situation was where he lived. Many say, "Ki hamayim hayu biyad hamitzri adumim kedam, v'nitlal benu biyad hayisraeli." It's a very similar midrash. I didn't track this one down exactly, but it's a very similar midrash the other way around. Is that it was blood? Meaning we saw that it was water, but it would turn to blood. So he says, "No, it was blood and it would turn to water." But basically, it's the same thing. That if it was in one cup, two straws, then the Jew would get water. And listen to what bothers him.
By the way, he doesn't say that it was blood. He said it was red.
Red, okay. Im kein, lama lo nichtav ot ze b'Torah. He goes, wow, that's incredible. Why didn't the Torah write this down? Which means this would have been a really great sign. Why not mention this? Now, is that fair or that's unfair?
You mean about the money?
You're still on the money. No, it's.
It does say that, you know, that the Jews had good clean water.
Yeah.
And the Mitzrayim had bloody water.
Good. Where does it say that? It may have said it in Torah Tidbits, but it may have. You look for that pasuk. If you find that pasuk, you let me know. Which means that's exactly what's bothering the devs. Now, this is only partially fair, because obviously there are some things which are midrashim and some things in the text. But now listen to what the Ibn Ezra says.
Someone who says that if they dug alongside
plain water. Right. But let's read. So he says, listen, this is such an unbelievable thing. Ibn Ezra is saying, if such an unbelievable miracle took place, so shouldn't the Torah have told us this? Continue. Ulafi da'ati, he writes, ki makat hadam v'hatzvardayim v'hakinim hayta kolelet ha-mitzrim v'ha-ivrim. He says the first three plagues, Dam, Tzodeh, and Kinim, blood, frogs, and lice, affected both the Jews and the Egyptians. So the Ibn Ezra did not go to Gan. He did not have a Ganenet who set him straight and told him what real, authentic Judaism is. And we'll see a little bit why he says it. But first, before we see why he says it, let's look at the Radvaz in source number 3. Radvaz is Rav David ben Zimra. He was born in 1479 in Sfad, and he died 1479 in Spain, and he died 1573 in Israel in Sfad. Although in between 1513 and 1553, which is a very long time, he was the chief rabbi of Egypt, head of the Beit Din, and he didn't take any salary. Just in case anybody's interested. He was a wealthy man, lived off of his business. Obviously, would not be accepted today. He writes in source number 3, Umasha katav harav Avram ben Ezra, the Ibn Ezra, ki makat adam vatzvaradim vakinim hayalim mitzrim uli Yisrael asur lahamin davar kazeh. By the way, it's very strong. You are not allowed to believe what he wrote. Mm-hmm. By the way, he did not exactly say that this is heresy. But what did he say? You're not allowed to believe this. Kol shkein, certainly, why can't you believe it? Shehaktuvim morim hefech. Because the text itself attests to the opposite. So again, what does the Ibn Ezra say? The Ibn Ezra says that the first three plagues affected the Jews and the Egyptians. And what does he say? You read the Chumash. It says the opposite. So the Radvaz had the same Chumash as my mother, where it says absolutely the opposite. V'lo yachlu mitzrim l'shtot mayim. It says then the Egyptians couldn't drink water. V'lo yachlu mitzrim. Actually, it doesn't say mitzrim there.
Mitzrayim.
It says mitzrayim. V'lo yachlu mitzrayim l'shtot mayim. By the way, living in Egypt, I wonder how this affects how his understanding of the word mitzrayim or not. But the word mitzrayim, what does it mean? Is the word mitzrim and mitzrayim the same word? Mitzrim would mean the Egyptians, and mitzrayim would be
everybody.
Egypt. Okay. V'yachvu kol Mitzrayim sivirot ha'yor, and Egypt dug near the water. Mashma, aval Yisrael lo yitzrichim l'zeh, but the Jews didn't need this. Ko yushotim imei ha'yor, the Jews were able to drink. Uvitzardim, and then he brings verses, and we'll take a look at the verses, we don't need the rest of it. And he goes on to say, very, very clearly, the Ibn Ezra, what's he talking about? It's against what it says in the Chumash. Now, here's the interesting point. Just three, I would say random, but not really random, three commentators, which are on 4, 5, and 6, in no particular order. The first is the Ri Ibn Shu'av, which is a student of the Ritva, which means he lived over 700 years ago. He writes, Lafi dat razal, according to the rabbis, hayu kinim gam ken b'Yisrael, the Jews also suffered from kinim. Ela sheloyu matza'arim otam, but they didn't suffer from them. Well, the mitzrim ayu matza'arim, but the Egyptians suffered from the kinim. The Meiri, in source 5, writes, but regarding kinim, it's not so clear. I'm skipping a little bit. The Gemara says But regarding the Jews, the Gemara says that they had kinim. So it's very interesting. What the Radvaz at least partially says that you cannot say, you have the Ibn Shu'ab and the Meiri quoting the Gemara saying it. And not only them, there's also somebody very famous in source 6 who also lived in Egypt, whose name was the Rambam, who writes, and this is on Pirkei Avot, also the Meiri was, on Pirkei Avot, it says there were 10 miracles that took place for our ancestors in Egypt. All these 10, they were for the Egyptians were struck and not the Israelites. V'lashon ha-Torah b'chol makam mehen. Again, v'lashon ha-Torah b'chol makam mehen. Shahi b'mitzrayim levad. And the text of the Torah says that all of these were by the Egyptians themselves. Zulat ha-kinim, except for kinim, shulo bi'erba zeh. It doesn't explain. Aval yadua shlo anashet yisrael. But it's known the Jews were not punished. V'amnan ha-yu mitzuyot etzlam v'lo tzi'iram otam v'chein bi'iru ha-chachamim. And he also is quoting the rabbis as saying that it's well known that the Jews had the kinim as well, they just didn't suffer from it. And he says, and the rabbis say this. Now, let's be clear on one thing. The Ibn Ezra, who attracted the attention of the Radvaz, most likely because the Radvaz felt that he was mocking the rabbis. He says, a lot of people say he didn't have to write it like that. What could he have said? He could have written, there's a midrash that says this, and I don't see it clearly in the text, which is perfectly allowed to do. Not only that, the Ibn Ezra writes in his introduction to his commentary. He actually wrote 3 commentaries, 3 different points of his life. And there's a little confusion between the two. His last one he wrote, I'm just saying this because you wouldn't have even imagined such a thing. The last commentary he wrote, which is partial, he wrote when he lived in London. And you're going to say, I didn't know the Ibn Ezra lived in London. Go ahead, say it. There you go. So, the Ibn Ezra writes that there is such a thing as the way Chazal understands something, both in halacha and in what we can call hashkafa. And he says that's of great value, but there's also value to the way the Torah actually wrote something. And let's not confuse between the two. And therefore, the Ibn Ezra will at times explain things against Jewish law, not because he didn't believe in Jewish law, but he felt that the Torah needs to be understood as far as what the Torah says. And that's really what's bothering him over here. A lot of people say that you'd have one cup of water and it would be half red and half not. And he's saying, I don't see that inside the text. And the Radvaz is saying, what are you talking about? You know, really what the Radvaz is saying. Chazal say it and it doesn't contradict the text. So, meaning the Radvaz's starting point is, if the Chacham say something and it's not contradicted by the text, how dare you say that it's not in the text? But Ibn Ezra is saying, but all the, meaning this is the point, all the little kids think that's what it really says in the Torah. Mm-hmm. So let's be careful what the Torah says versus what you take out of it. So that's really the background. So, the others who I quoted, the Ibn Shu'ab, the Meiri, and the Rambam, they were all only addressing kinim. And their point that with kinim, it's not really clear. So, here's what we're going to do today. All this was introduction. I know. Only I can have an introduction, then 5-minute class. The
6-minute introduction.
Right, right. So this is what we're going to look for. The Ibn Ezra believes that the text of the Chumash does not indicate that there was distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians. Others are going to tell you, what are you talking about? There was distinction between the Jews and Egyptians by every one of the Makot. So let's take a look and see, A, where it says it clearly and where it doesn't say it clearly. And see, there's actually 2 ways of doing this. One way is the way that I found everyone else do it. Read the verses and then try to be midayek, try to read it carefully to see, did this apply only to the Jews, Egyptians as well? But there's a second way, and that's what we're going to do today as well, and we're going to look at the response of Paro. Mm-hmm. Because the response of Paro may be one way when it says it clearly in the Torah, and may be very different when it doesn't say it clearly in the Torah, which may then give us an indication as far as what it was that really got to Paro. So I've laid everything out. Everything's black and white right now, or actually red and green. I actually wrote the word Dam, if any of you have my sources that I emailed. Yes. Yeah, you saw that? The Dam is in red and the Tzvardeya was in green? Okay, anyway, that's it. I need still to do things here to amuse myself. So, I can can assure you, on my sources, red and green. Okay. So.
We didn't have a color printer.
You didn't have a color printer. So.
We
don't want to waste the ink. Okay. Let's take a look at them. Let's take a look at them. Vayomer Hashem. We'll take up a collection for you afterwards. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Emol aron kach matcha unatei yadcha. Take your staff, stretch out your arm, and so on. I'm in source number 7, right after the red. Right? Vahayadam b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. There will be blood all of Egypt. Now, again, what are we looking for? Is the blood only affecting the Egyptians or the Jews? So what does it mean to you when it says b'chol eretz Mitzrayim? So, answer, we don't know. Why? Because there's Eretz Mitzrayim and there's Eretz Goshen. Is Eretz Goshen subsumed within Eretz Mitzrayim, or is it separate? So, what's the answer? Say it. We don't know. So we can have our suspicions, but does the text, at least when it says this is what's going to happen, so continue. V'yasu kein Moshe v'Aaron, kasher tziva Hashem. They did, they lifted up the thing, and they hit the water, and le'enei paro le'enei avadav. V'yavchu kol hamayim asher b'yor l'dam. So what does it actually say? The entire Nile has become blood. V'adagasha b'yor meta, v'yavasha yor, v'lo yichlu Mitzrayim lishtot mayim. Now what word did you think it may have said there?
Mitzrim.
And if we wanted to fit into our various midrashim, how do we have to change the Torah? We'd have to write the word Mitzrim instead of Mitzrayim. But unfortunately, we can't really do that. Yeah.
Well, later on by Sher Tayam, you have the word Mitzrayim being repeated, and it means the Mitzrayim.
So that's the reason you have to be careful. So the Radvaz over here is convinced it says Egypt, so is it Egyptians or Egypt? And that's really what this hinges on. V'lo yichlu Mitzrayim l'shtot mayim in ya'or, v'yadam b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. So it means in this whole area there is blood. Right? I don't know exactly what they did. And then he wouldn't listen. So over here, why wouldn't he listen? Which means, again, it's almost like a magic show over here. You keep getting led away from what the focus is. Why didn't Paro listen? So it seems to be over here because the magicians of Egypt indicated that they can do this thing as well, so therefore God is not unique. Because the Egyptians do it. God is not unique. Which means Dam Paro's, how should we put this? Paro's hardening of his arteries is a result of the sign not being unique to God. So it's a lack of God's uniqueness which takes place over here by Dam. Which means I could have said that, hold it, Paro, look, this is supernatural, like the Midrashim do. It's supernatural. I have one cup of water, right? You know, this part is blood and this part is water, and that should have been something that's amazing. That is not registered by Paro. Which means if that were the case, which is very nice in our Midrash, but it's not here. In fact, it uses the word, the Mitzrayim could not find water. There was Dam b'kol eretz Mitzrayim, Pasukav Dalid. V'yichperu kol Mitzrayim sevivot ha'yor mayim l'shtot, kilosvot mimeya'or. They dug, Mitzrayim dug. So the most you can tell me right now, again, can anybody tell me that there's absolute proof to the Midrash in the way that the biblical text is written? There's proof that there was a distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians? I think you're going to have a hard time saying there's evidence over here. Yeah.
But I'd like to, I'm going back to where it says, V'lo yachlu Mitzrayim lishtot.
Right.
The country itself can't drink.
Right.
So it has to be the Mitzrim. And then when you go a little further,
But you lost me. Why did it have to be the Mitzrim and not everybody who lives there?
It would include everybody.
Including the Jews.
Yeah.
Okay, agreed. Agreed, because it said Mitzrayim instead of Mitzrim.
So but anybody could be a Mitzri.
Right.
That's a Jew living at this point.
Right, we agree.
Oh, okay. Because I thought thought you were distinguishing Jewish Mitzrim as opposed to Mitzrim.
No. Quite the opposite. I'm saying that there's no textual evidence in Dam. There's no textual evidence that there's distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians. If you want to read into it, you can certainly read into it. You want to tell your kids that there were two straws coming out, you can certainly say it. It just doesn't say it in the Chumash. Okay, that's my whole point.
This would almost disprove the Midrash, though.
And you could say it almost disproves the Midrash. But again,
it hinges... water from the sides.
Right, it hinges on what the word Mitzrayim means. If it means Egyptians, in terms of a race, versus the Jews. But as I said, it's not. It's certainly not clear. Exactly. Kol Mitzrayim.
But they did find.
No, that's the whole point. It disproves the Midrash, because it says they had clean water if they dug from the side.
They dug from the sides.
They have clean
able
water
to drink it. That is against the Midrash.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I'm saying that the Midrash over here, once you start looking in the text itself, the Midrash is not all that simple. So again, the Radvaz, for all of his excitement and saying to the Radvaz, you're not allowed to believe such a thing. Hold it a second. The Ibn Ezra's not terrible. He didn't say anything terrible over here. He's saying, I want to understand the pshat. I want to understand what the Chumash actually said. Okay, continue. Yeah.
A week.
It says a week. Yeah. Wine. You drink
wine.
Yeah, they've been doing France for 500 years. No, there are places that don't drink water. I mean, by the way, that's the reason they drank wine, because they didn't have access to good water sources. Mm-hmm. So wine you would ferment, put it away, and it would be good.
How about the animals?
Do they have football?
Pretzels.
Okay. Svardea. Which, and again, in my sources, is green. You're missing the whole, right? By the frogs, v'ima ina tala shaleichin enochi nogef. It's called vulecha bitzvar de'im. Your entire, within your borders, literally, will be struck with frogs. Then it goes. It'll be in the water. It'll be in your homes, in your bedrooms, whatever. It's not clear who is included and who is excluded. When it's actually done, all of the land of Egypt was covered with frogs. So again, my point is, if in fact the Jews were not included, I'm willing to accept that. I'm just pointing out something. What's that?
It doesn't
actually say it.
But it actually also says, v'chol
avadech. Right. Now, v'chol avadech is interesting, but it doesn't mean that the Jews are not included. So, yeah. And that's it.
That's important. It's because when Paro increased the labors of the Jews, made them go get their own straw, they complained loudly about that happening to them. So if Moses comes and there are plagues, and the plagues are happening to them too, we'd be crunching.
So this is wonderful.
That's
from the fact
proof
that Jews aren't complaining, that already tells me something.
Okay, cool.
By the way, but they complained to Paro. They were not complaining to Moshe. Or they complained to Moshe less. But yeah.
We do have Mimenu Me'ami, from which you might imply, even though he wouldn't pray for the Jews, still he could have said it differently from the entire land.
Let's take a look. As I said, we actually want to see all of them if we can today, which we are rapidly. We'll go a little over time. If you have to leave, then just walk out. But if you walk out early, then like make a noise as if you're really upset. We like drama. And when it's actually done, it says that it covers the whole land. And Paro's response over here all along the way is really not an unbelievable response. Okay? I mean, he doesn't respond in any dramatic way. Kenim is very interesting, because again, that's the third one that was claimed takes place to the Jews as well, or doesn't take place to the Jews. Over here, once again, it uses the same kind of word. This is in Source 10, and v'yala kinim b'kol eretz Mitzrayim, where it's bold. Again, in the next book, b'kol eretz Mitzrayim, without any limitation. Over here, once again, we have our magicians, and I love this, because they try to get kinim and they couldn't. That, to me, by the way, is absolutely remarkable. Bring any six-year-old and say, here, watch this. So over here, it's... I'm sorry for that. But it's the fact that they couldn't do Kenim which impresses me much more. That's the miracle. Not that he did the Kenim. There's no lice around. I mean, come on. So over here as well, when it comes to lice, it says Lekinim Bekol Eretz Mitzrayim, and again Vayel Kinim Bekol Eretz Mitzrayim. So what is similar about the first three is that it says all of Egypt, and there really is no limiting or mitigating comment. By Arov, source 11. Because there's not even Mitzrim used over there.
No, but also the Chachamim finally say, this is Yad Elohim.
Yeah, as I said, the more you look at it, Ibn Ezra's argument is not bad at all in terms of what's pshat over here. It's certainly not preposterous. It's certainly not, you're not allowed to believe such a thing. But let's look at Arov. Arov is 11. What is important is Pasuk Yudchet. V'hifleti bayom ahu et eretz goshen, asher amid omed aleha, levilti hayod sham arov, leman teda, kini Hashem bekerav aretz. Here it says, black and white, but I will make a distinction, and in the land of Goshen, there will not be this particular plague, in order that you know that I am God within the land. And what's Paro's response? This is the first time that Paro says, okay, go and serve your God. So I have to stress something over here. Ibn Ezra did not, as far as I know, bring this as any kind of evidence, but I see something interesting. The first three, okay, I could say there's a natural phenomenon taking place. The fact that you could predict it beforehand is not all that impressive. Moshe has some kind of ability of knowing what kind of natural phenomenon is going to take place. So the blood comes, but if it's equal, again, which the text does not contradict, so then Paro is not going to be all that moved, especially when his people can go and also maybe manipulate and turn it. When Tzfardea comes, if it's equal, Paro has no response. By Kenim, if it's equal, Paro has no response. Over here, which is the first time the Torah actually tells us black and white it was different, Paro's response is, okay, go serve God. So I'm saying the response of God is what I find interesting. The response of Paro is what I find particularly interesting. Continue. Dever. Over here again in Pasuk Dalet it says, "V'hifla Hashem bein miknei Yisrael bein miknei Mitzrayim," that God made a distinction between the flocks. And what does it say happened then? Pasuk Vav, "Vayas Hashem et Dvar Hazeh mimachrat v'yamat kol miknei Mitzrayim u'miknei bnei Yisrael lo met echad," and from the Jews not even one died. The problem is the next pasuk. Paro actually investigates. What does the ad echad mean? The ad echad is interesting because, again, this is exactly what my thesis is. It's that it's Paro's understanding that there's a distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians is what actually is going to be moving him. Over here he investigates, but we have a very strange language. So in the Midrash and found in Source 13 it says, what does ad echad mean? So here we have the cup with two straws, but it's an animal. The animal, which was jointly owned, didn't die. By the way, according to the Midrash, by the blood, then it was blood. So it's interesting that it's saying that, why is the Midrash saying this? What's bothering the Midrash is the ad echad. It should have said, in absolute terms, not one died, like it did the word, which means, again, in absolute terms, it said factually what happened, not even one died. Paro investigates, and what is it said? It said that he looks at an ad echad, which is such a straight, anybody? How would you translate ad echad?
Up to one.
Yeah, but it's strange,
but
to...
It's awkward.
It's very awkward to put it that way. It's very strange to phrase it this way. Therefore, look at the told that you'd... Look at the Tolda, correct, which is also why they say that maybe Paro didn't die there. Look at the Tolda Yitzchak in Source 14. Again, V'yishlach Paro v'nei lo met m'mikne Yisrael ad echad, v'chid lev Paro v'lo shalachat et ha'am, v'yishlach Paro v'nei lo met m'mikne Yisrael ad echad, v'chid lev, sorry, ha'tam sha'afa pi shara'a, sh'mikne Mitzrayim ha'tam ha'kav yamat kol Mikne Mitzrayim, v'lo meit Mikne Yisrael ad echad, im kol zevich elev paro. O yomar, sha'ach ha-shara, sha'mikne Yisrael lo meit echad, amar bilibo. So this is great. You go back to that financial thing. What did Paro say? Well, the Jews are my slaves, and none of their animals died. I'll take all of their animals. So that's the way that he reads it. Again, Amar Bilibo, Zota Makaleim Yafach Shani Epara Mimiknehim, Kola Miknehemetu Miami, Ulafize, Pirish Mashamar, Vine Lomate Mimiknehsoral Adechad, Hutam Visiba La Amar, Lamashe Amar, Vichbed Leif Parovashlachata Am. Because again, he looks, he investigates. So the result should have been that he sees they all die, so he should have stopped. He goes, no. He sees they all die, he goes, okay, but they're my slaves. That means these animals are mine. I'll let them watch them for me, take them for me, and then I'm going to take them from them. The Malbim writes, V'yesh lomar, sh'ya behemat ben ha'isha ha'yisraelit v'hu ben ish mitzri. There was one person. Ben, is he Jewish or is he not Jewish? Ben ha'isha ha'yisraelit v'hu ben ish mitzri. Shebedina Yisrael hayakim mitzri. Before Matan Torah, I know all of you, at least half of you believe, or most of you, believe that Judaism follows the mother. That's only after Matan Torah. Tribal affiliation follows the father. Religion follows the mother, but we became Jews at Har Sinai, so it only started by Sinai. So here before Sinai, what's the Malbim insisting? That the Ben Ha'isha Yisraelit follows his father, and therefore, Shebedina Yisrael hayakim mitzri. Uparo chashav shehu miYisrael. Paro thought he was Jewish. V'kevin shebehem tometa lo netkaim devrei Moshe v'alkein v'ichbed leif paro. Now he's working really hard. Let's admit it. He's working really hard, but he's working really hard. But why is he working so hard? Because he's bothered by the exact same thing that was pointed out before. Paro investigates, but he stops. So over here, again, I just want to go through when there is a distinction in the text. That's when Paro is affected. Over here, he was affected. He looks and he sees something. So what was it that Rav Yitzchak Karo said in the Toldot Yitzchak? What did he claim that he sees? He realizes, hold it, this isn't really affecting me because I'm going to take all of their animals. So it's more of an economic. On the other hand, according to the way the Malbim looks at it, it's ad echad, which is a funny language. Oh, there was one person whose genealogy was questionable, and his animal died. Ah, you look, it's not consistent, and that's what caused or allowed Paro to harden his heart. Shchin says, Bechol Eretz Mitzrayim, in source number 16. What's the result? Bechazeka, Hashem Leif Paro, there's no response. Barad, in source 17. It says, by Barad, Rak pasakavav, rak pe'eretz goshen, asher sham b'nei Yisrael lo haya barad. Absolute terms. By barad, by the hail, there was no hail in Goshen. What does it say in the very next pasuk? Vayishlach paro k'mo Moshe la'aron, vayomer, aleim chatati apam, Hashem tzadik v'ani v'ami rishayim. You know, go. I'm going to send you. Which means, again, when Paro clearly sees the distinction between the Jews and between the Egyptians, then Paro says, it's time to go. Arbe. It says by Arab, Bekol Eretz Mitzrayim, Bekol Gvul Mitzrayim, Bekol Eretz Mitzrayim. Is there any distinction there? And over here, he says that he sinned, but he does not, asking them to stop it, but he does not offer to send them to go. The only two times he offered to send them to go were the two times when there was a clear distinction, and at that point he said to go. The third time where there was a clear distinction, but that's the ad echad, that's where we find he investigates and he pauses, which actually strengthens, or you realize why the Malbim is kvetching, because he realizes there's something going on over here. Look at night. But he doesn't tell him to go. Yeah, but it's not. It's look at Choshech.
There's no distinction in Choshech.
Of Choshech, it's clear there is a distinction. Yeah. Right. So Choshech is 19. Here it says the Chol Bnei Yisrael Ya'or B'Moshevatam, and what does Paro say? L'chol Avduat Hashem. Distinction, go. we'll skip all of those. And finally, let's get to Makat Becharot. By Makat Becharot, is there a distinction?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We make it.
Ah. So it's very interesting. You know, if I start with the starting point that even the Rambam said before he shifted gears, what did the Rambam say? No, the Jews were not punished at all. First of all, I want to go back to Choshech. There are even rumors there that in the darkness, there are even rumors there that there were Jews who suffered from that. To say that no Jews suffered from any of the plagues is interesting, except for why Chazal saying that people did. But as I said, that's not reflected in the text at all. And even Chamushin there, Rashi does not, that's Rashi, if I'm not mistaken, his second interpretation. His first interpretation is actually Pshat. Chamushin means they were armed.
Right.
Correct. He's not ready to go completely. But let's think now about Makat Becharot. Makat Becharot, if our starting point is the Jews are not affected whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Specifically with Dorcas, it says it didn't affect the Jews.
Right.
So we have a Midrash that says it didn't.
I know. That's why it's so funny. When you actually that's why I said to myself. Let's actually look what the Torah says, because we have all of these midrashim to the point that we're not even clear what the Torah says versus what it doesn't say.
What do you think we are?
Oh, Deka. When it comes to Makat Becharot, here it sounds as if the default is that all the Jews are going to suffer as well, mm-hmm. unless they go and do something and put a sign on the doorpost and so on. Which means to come and say, oh, the Jews are not affected by this at all, it sounds to be that the Torah actually contradicts this by telling us, and the whole Passover process, as it were, in order that when the plague comes, which means, again, make believe you're God for a second, maybe easier for some of you, that... get in touch with your inner God. If you want to take the Jews out and not have them affected at all, how hard is that? Right? Mm-hmm. An anthropomorphic finger. Right? You take them out. But over here, it goes out of the way to say, take the blood, put it on the doorpost. The plague is going to come. The plague is uncontrollable. When the plague comes, everyone's going to suffer by it. So then I have to ask myself, okay, let's go back to my first three plagues. My first three plagues, it says, in the entire land of Egypt. A number of the plagues said that. I think five of them said that, the entire land of Egypt. So we go out of our way to say, hold it. The Jews did not suffer whatsoever. The others suffered. So again, I can even go the way that the Rambam, others, by the way, this Gemara that they quote, there's no such Gemara. They said the Gemara says no such Gemara. Even the Gemara that says that the Jews didn't, they say it was the Jews had blood but didn't suffer from it. They had kinim but it didn't itch so much. Sardaya was there but they liked frog soup. But the Gemara says they didn't suffer from it but it affected them. So to say that the Jews were affected by the plagues, especially when you look at Makat Becharot, why is it such a strange thing? In order for it to not affect us, God says, I want you to go do the following procedure to prevent the impact of the plagues. My point is just to go backwards over here. And again, I already gave you the bottom line before I started. The Ibn Ezra was attacked for claiming, having the chutzpah, to say that the Jews were affected by the first three plagues. And Radvai says, you can't believe such a thing. It doesn't seem to me to be such a terrible thing to say if you want to read what the Chumash actually says. Could there be an agenda within Chazal in order to make this distinction as much as possible? Certainly there could be agenda. But let's distinguish between an agenda of Chazal versus what the Chumash actually says. And I'm saying quite the opposite is true. Actually reading the psukim, reading the verses, as far as I'm concerned, is very edifying. It actually shows us something that we wouldn't notice when we only looked at the Midrashim. And what was the main point? When Paro actually responds. Where the Chumash says black and white that there was a distinction, then Paro responds and says, oh, you guys better go. That actually, if I can tell, that's evidence that the Ibn Ezra's approach is the correct approach, and therefore that not only is the Ibn Ezra's approach correct, but it's the pshat of what the Chumash actually says.